Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great week for It's the Real.
How do we do it?
We're not going to tell the people how we do it.
No, not this week.
Not this week. What did we get into this week, Jeff?
We went to Jeffrey's listening party.
Oh, Young Thug.
Yes, formerly Young Thug. Now he is, no, my name is Jeffrey.
It was at the YouTube space downtown. We definitely got there. We thought late.
Yeah, it turns out it was early. Jeffrey was on a flight.
Jeffrey was making his way from Atlanta and didn't come until after all the music had played. So the greatest thing was, so you had Lior there.
Yeah, Lior Cohen is standing on stage.
And you know we're Lior fans, so we're here for Lior.
By the way, some girl who works for him was like, "Who are you?" And I say, "It's the Real," and she goes, "Oh my God, you're huge. Lior fans," to the point that I was wearing a Lior name tag.
The word has spread. It's the Real. Big Lior fans. We're there for Lior. We're there to see him conduct an interview with Young Thug. Problem is,
he's not much of an interviewer.
Well, no.
And yeah, also,
sorry. Problem is, Young Thug's not even there.
Yeah. Young Thug also not a great answerer,
that's,
I guess.
Well, yeah, you know.
All
so,
that.
So before Thug even got there, Kevin Lyles was on stage and
acting like it was like a 1979 disco.
It was unbelievable. Like queuing up the music, pointing to people, getting everyone riled up.
Going, and here we go.
It was an experience. So eventually Thug showed up. Jeffrey showed up. Whatever his name is. He showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of questions for him from Lior. Very generic. I did like how it was streaming worldwide, and Lior points to a big monitor and says, "We're getting questions from Iceland. We're getting questions from France. We're getting questions from
Denmark.
But we're not going to acknowledge any of them. Thug, when are your concert tickets going on sale?"
And Young Thug said,
So also this week, we went to two parties for the now 21-year-old Justine Skye.
And if people don't know who Justine Skye is, she is an R&B singer.
Mm-hmm.
We've had her on the podcast.
She signed to Roc Nation. She's managed by Lenny S.
She's best friends with, like, several Kardashians.
And, like, Jaden Smith, right? You've
yeah.
seen her. And, you know, like all 21-year-olds, she's into parties. And she's into birthday parties. And we went to two of them. And ever since she was on this podcast, you've had this...
Well, it's not only her. Like, so I have a few favorite things to do on social networks.
Okay.
One of them is that if you write something spammy, like, you know, check out my mixtape on one of my friend's Instagrams, I'm going to copy and paste it and write the same thing underneath,
right underneath it.
Yeah. The other thing I like to do is on Twitter, if someone sends a subliminal at like a diss at somebody.
Yep.
Without, like, naming any names.
Yes.
I like to respond to every single one and
same.
Say, "Is this about me?"
And the answer, really...
is no.
Is no, it's not.
But I like doing it.
So
Justine Skye, her Twitter feed is all subs.
Listen,
Every single message is a
sub. She's a 21-year-old girl who's, you know, every week she's going through it, right?
Yeah, so, like, you know, she's either talking about a guy she likes and he's disinterested, or she's talking about bad friends or anything, and single message...
She could be saying, like, "This sandwich was terrible."
And every single thing I say, "Is this about me?
Is this about me?" And does she ever answer?
No.
No, okay. So
I think it's a really good bit.
So Justine is somebody who we've seen out a bunch. Her publicist is one of our best friends. And it's not unusual for us to run into Justine. But you have this thing hanging over your head.
At a certain point, I was like, you know, I'm significantly older than she is. At a certain point, I'm like, maybe this is, like, sort of creepy. Like, for me to just keep saying, "Is this about me?" You know, like, on Twitter, where she doesn't get the tone of the voice.
Well, also, she's never responded.
No, so,
never,
you know,
ever.
I'm just the creep who says, "Is this about me?
Is this about me?" So, she never responds. One of those times when we hung out with her, we're at this club, and you kept such a distance. It was like there was a force field that you were like, "I don't want to get near her because I don't want her to be like, hey, you creep."
Yeah.
Get out of my mentions and know it's not about you and nothing's about you and nah. So finally, we go to her birthday party this week.
And, you know, it was a star-studded affair.
Fabulous. Khaled.
And we walk in and Justine walks over to me.
This is it.
And says, "It's not about you, okay?" To which I said, "It is about me."
She knows.
She knows.
Nah, for real, for real. Shout out to Justine Skye. Happy birthday to her.
Nah, for real, For real.
Jeff, this week on A Waste of Time, we have...
We have Zaytoven.
Zaytoven, the Atlanta producer by way of the Bay, by way of Germany. I think he lived in San Diego for a little bit. Really great guy. Interesting story. You know his music from...
I mean, Gucci Mane.
Yep.
I mean, Future.
Yeah.
Like, anybody who has ever stepped foot in Atlanta who is...
They better know Zaytoven.
I mean, everybody knows Zaytoven.
Let's get into this episode. When do you think?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Word on Road, a.k.a. Stop. Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Too Much Sauce, a.k.a. Swimming in Gravy.
What? Oh, I didn't know that was the intro. I didn't know. Let's do that over. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. You took my line, though. Too Much Sauce. That's my line.
Oh, shit. Oh, no. All right, one more time?
Yeah.
All right. Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Word on Road, a.k.a. Stop.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Too Much Sauce, a.k.a. Swimming in Gravy.
Yo, what up, man? It's Mr. Funky Fingers, a.k.a. 88 Keys, a.k.a. Mr. Too Much Sauce, checking in. What it do?
Yeah, and this is a waste of time with this real. Zay, what's happening?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good.
Welcome to New York.
Thank you, man.
Welcome to the Upper West Side specifically.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
And the craziest thing is that when you came in here, you noticed that we had Black Magic cameras in our apartment. And if people are listening, if they're only listening to this podcast,
mm-hmm. they're missing out.
They're by far missing out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You need to experience this through the lens three Black Magic cameras.
You're right.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure you're used to cameras all the time.
Yeah, it's like you right here, you know, right here in the face of it. It's live and direct with
That's
these
right.
cameras.
You can see the sunglasses that Zay is wearing. Mm-hmm. You can see the dad hats that are made specifically for
Gucci Mane.
The
Gucci
legend,
man.
Gucci.
Yeah. Gucci Mane, yeah.
From our friends over at Atlantic Records. If you're not watching this, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But we're so happy to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
We've heard amazing things. We've seen interviews that you've done. We've heard amazing things from our friend Miss Info, who mm-hmm. interviewed you already.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we want to talk about is you have a past as a barber.
Yes, yes, yes.
When did you start cutting hair?
I started cutting hair when my brothers were old enough to get haircuts. Like, you know.
Like from birth?
Well, not, you know, when they start getting, like, me and my brothers are like 4 years apart, then mm-hmm. the other one we 8 years apart. So I know when my brother turned, had to be 8, and I was old enough to play with the Clippers, mm-hmm. I started cutting his hair.
Well, is that like sort of like trial and error?
Trial and error, yeah, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just messing his head up. But, you know, that's something you want to do. When you got a younger brother, you can experiment.
Yeah, well, yeah. I hope you perfected it at a certain point.
Yeah. After a while, it took me till I got to high school and, you know, start cutting my friends. You know why? Then I perfected it.
Were you good with the clippers and with scissors?
Well, I didn't really use scissors like that. You know, I started messing with the clippers once I learned how to do the fade. When I got my fade down, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, I was in the game. I never really used clippers that much. Scissors that much.
Do you follow Rick Ross on Snapchat?
Not Snap. No, I
okay.
don't.
Because uh-huh. he has a friend of his whose name is Slab, and like it's his like buddy who he takes everywhere. Memphis or,
yeah.
or Miami or Atlanta, wherever. And he is seemingly just a friend, but and by the way, Slab like takes over on his Snapchat, and it's called
he's
like
a star.
Slab reporting live.
Yeah,
but the other day Ross is like, I need a haircut. He's out in like Europe or something, and he's like, I got 10 bands for whoever will cut my hair and do a good job. And he ended up giving his buddy Slab the clippers. And he, like, has his phone, and he's documenting himself getting this haircut, and he's just shaking his head. He's like, this is the worst.
So
worst haircut
angry.
In the
yeah.
world.
Yeah. Like, you just can't have, like, any friends take the clippers and give you...
No, you can't. Not at all. Not when you care about how you look.
Have you yeah. given yourself haircuts?
Yes. I used to do it all the time. I used to mess my head up all the time.
Oh.
Yeah, but, you know, that's how you learn.
Shouts to Yachty for that.
You want
to
talk about where you get your haircut?
I get my haircut at a place that also sells gold, so shouts to them. New York City rent is a bitch.
not great.
No
barbers over
no,
there.
No, they stink. Zaytoven, if you want to stick around, you can also cut my hair. That'd be amazing.
I got you. I definitely got you.
Let's go back to the very beginning. You're born in Germany.
Germany, yes. Frankfurt, Germany.
Frankfurt, Germany. Mm-hmm. So your father was in the service?
Yes, sir.
What arm of the service?
The army.
The army?
Yeah.
And so he was serving out there, like, at the end of his career, or where?
No, he ended his career in Atlanta, Georgia,
okay.
really. So that's one of the reason I even came to Atlanta.
So you went Germany. How long did you spend out there?
Oh, I don't even remember Germany at all.
Oh, okay.
So I think we went to Germany, then we went to North Carolina, then we went to Columbus, Georgia, then we went to California, you know, like San Diego, San Francisco, then we went to Atlanta.
Where's the longest place that you stayed?
The longest, I'd have to be Atlanta now, because, you know.
Well, yeah, now you're an adult.
yeah, now I'm an adult, but, you know, the other places, you know, 4 or 5 years is, you know, the max I spent. And
well, how do you keep friends? Isn't that, like, tough to keep, like, moving?
I enjoyed it, man. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed having the friends that I had, but then I also was excited about moving, like making new friends. So. Hmm.
And where's the place you wish you would have stayed as a kid?
San Diego.
Yeah?
San Diego was just like the prettiest city I ever lived in, I felt like.
And that's
a
military city.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I just had so much fun, the scenery. I just love San Diego.
You spent your high school years, your real like formative years in the Bay.
In San Francisco, yep.
You get your driver's license out there?
Yes, I did.
How are you as a driver?
18. I think I'm a great driver.
Yeah?
Especially out there, you got to be a good driver. You got to parallel park on the hill that's like super steep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You drive manual?
You mean like a stick?
No,
I can't.
Just strictly automatic.
I tear the clutch out the car. I tried it, and I just burnt out the clutch, and I was like, I don't want to do that no more.
What were you listening to in the Bay when you were there?
I was listening to Bay Area music.
Yeah.
It was Messy Marv, JT the Bigger Figure, San Quinn, Be Legit, you know.
On CDs. Guys.
On CDs,
yeah.
Was it tapes? Was I still on tapes back then?
Maybe.
It might have been tapes around. Well, CDs and tapes.
Yeah, sure.
Put it like that.
But like... we're all a similar age. Was like, what was the music that really like first hit you? Was it like Death Row stuff?
Death Row. It was. You hit it right on the head. It was Dre Day.
Yep.
And it's, you know, somebody played it for me, and it just really, you know, I wasn't allowed to listen to rap music for real, you know, because my dad's a preacher, my mom is choir director. That's how I started playing music, was in church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I really wasn't allowed to listen to music with profanity in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a buddy of mine, it just had a little Walkman and had the little single, the Dre Day single, and it was letting me listen to it, and I just could not stop listening to it just over and over and over again.
Man.
So it just caught me. That right there caught me. The Chronic album came out, and then it went to Doggy Style, and I was just stuck.
I remember buying the Doggy Style cassette and going with my mom to the store and covering up the parental advisory sticker with my thumb that we can get it home, you know?
Yeah. Did you get caught with like explicit advisories or anything? Like, did your parents catch you listening to
rap? They caught
rap?
Me listening to it, and it was crazy. I was listening to Redman, Muddy Waters' album. I was, you know, I fell asleep. I used to fall asleep with my music on. And I remember my dad coming in the room like, boy, what in the world are you listening to? Like, what is this? Like, he already throw the whole cassette thing, just throw it down, break it on the floor. Like, man, I don't bet I ever catch you listening to this no more.
And was that the last time he caught you?
Caught me, yeah.
Last time you ever listened to rap, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the last time he caught me listening to rap, but I was still listening to it.
Wait, so you grew up in the church,
mm-hmm.
and you grew up playing the piano in the church, the organ?
Yeah, the organ, piano, keyboard, all the same thing. Drums, too.
I mean, you're talking to two Jews, so we don't know anything about the church.
Yeah.
But every Sunday you were out there, and I read something that there was like a line of guys, like five of you or something, mm-hmm. who would rotate.
Yeah, playing
the drums.
So that's what made me kind of take interest in playing the keyboard is because, you know, when you're playing the drums, you got five people in line. It's like you got to wait your turn to play. So with the keyboard, then nobody else wanted to do that. So I said, you know what, I'll go start trying to learn how to play the keyboard.
How big a church is this?
This was maybe about 200-300 members, you know.
And you had five of them on drums.
Yeah,
like,
five guys.
Play.
Yes, you know, the young guys, we all want to, you know, get our chance to play the drums.
Well, yeah, what's the age range in the band? Like, do you have, like, somebody who's more senior than everybody else?
Yes, you do. You have you know, you have, the organist was the guy that really was the, you know, the one that was running everything. So he was maybe about
80.
No. No, he was actually young. He was about 26, 27 at the time, you know.
And
so,
he was like musical director?
Yeah, the music director. And us playing the drums, we still had a senior drummer, an older guy that played, but, you know, they always tried to let us, you know, be involved. So they'll be like, you know, let us get a turn to play a song, you know. So.
Were you nice in the pocket?
I think I was pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah. So that's all I did was play in the pocket. I couldn't really roll too much. I was just a pocket player. Yeah.
So if there's five of you there, you all have to play, like, right-handed?
Well, I think everybody was right-handed.
Okay, yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It sucked for the left-handed guy.
Yeah.
So you switched over to playing the organ.
Uh-huh.
And can you play any other instruments there, like bass or?
Not really. I started messing around with the bass, but, you know, it wasn't that interesting to me. you know, I started trying to play with it. But once I got into that organ and playing the keys, it's like I was just zoned in on that.
Right.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you still play every Sunday.
Every Sunday. Every Sunday.
Are you the musical director?
I am.
You should be.
Yeah, I am.
Is everybody right-handed?
Yeah, everybody right-handed. Yeah.
Better be.
Do you play on one of those? Like, have you played in a church with like one of those like giant organs where the pipes just like go like forever?
I've been to churches where they had the pipes in it, but I never played them because I wouldn't even know how to make that sound good.
Does any of that translate to playing like in a band at school?
Played in a band at school, and I didn't. The funny thing is I couldn't read music. Like in a band, when you play in a band, you got to learn how to read music.
Sure.
Right.
But I was so advanced at playing by ear and listening to music and playing it where, you know, I couldn't dumb down and learn how to read music. And I was so good that they just let me still play in the band.
What instrument?
I played the drums, and then they added keyboard just for out of nowhere. It's, you know, the school I was going to was kind of like, I would say ghetto, you know what I mean? So it's like, we just going to add pieces. You can play the keyboard. Okay, add this on top of that. And, you know, we're just putting stuff together. So.
Marching band, concert band, what were you in? Jazz band?
It was a jazz band, and it supposed to have been a marching band, but we didn't march nowhere. No. We just, you know, stayed there and played.
Well, I played drums in marching band. Jeff played...
Trumpet, and then they were like, yeah, you can play baritone horn, which is, like, not a cool...
And you played. Yeah,
girls don't like love the baritone horn. That's not like what the baritone horn's known for. But yeah, no, I didn't play.
No, but you walked around in marching band.
Yeah, I like to walk. I didn't like to play.
And faked playing.
Yeah.
Fake playing. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You just get through the parade and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. I liked getting from point A to point B.
And actually, well, did your march, well, you didn't march, but did you still play in the stands at like basketball games or football games?
That's how I got noticed in being a producer.
Really?
A guy by the name of JT the Bigger Figure came to the football games and saw me playing. It's like, hey man, I gotta get you in the studio. Like, you know, I wanna bring you to my house and to the studio.
You specifically?
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
Specifically. So
not the trumpet players.
It was me, and it was just because, you know, in doing breaks or intermissions, I might start playing a song that come on the radio or something. You know, just messing around.
Right.
And I think he kinda overheard that and said, hey man, let me talk to you. Let me, you know, bring you to the studio.
Well, that's actually kind of interesting because there's somewhat of a parallel now in Atlanta with Sir Foster, who plays the organ at the Hawks games.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met him or?
I haven't met him, but I remember him playing Bricks by Gucci.
Yeah,
Man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
At one game I was at. So.
Oh, you were there?
I was there, yeah.
And we were just like, that's.
I was
just,
yeah, it was weird. I was like, man, who playing that? Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Because, you know, not many stadiums have live organ players anymore. Right. Like, Yankee Stadium does. I think City Field where the Mets play.
Mm-hmm.
So the Madison Square Garden might. But the Hawks, like, Sir Foster became, like, a celebrity, like, down there.
You interviewed him.
I did interview him for...
Billboard,
I think.
Yeah.
And nice guy. And, like, you know, it's just... It's so funny how that really, like, took off.
It's real funny.
And you, I'm sure you appreciate that.
I definitely appreciate it. Definitely.
Yeah, do you get like an ASCAP check for him playing Bricks?
You know what? I haven't. Maybe I need to look in there and see.
Or you need to find Sir Foster.
I just look at the money and go cash the check. I don't really see where all this is coming from.
So JT the Bigger Figure notices you, and are you like, cool? Yeah,
is that your first studio session?
Yeah, I was young. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm with it. And so I go in there and, you know, learn how to play the equipment. He'll show me how to work the equipment and be like, okay, here, you know how to make a beat or whatever. So I'm finna go and I'll be back in a few hours. So I'm just, it's like toys to me. You know, I'm sitting there playing with him like it's toys. I'm just putting beats together.
Listening back now, do you see sort of like the blueprint of where you're at currently? Like all these years ago where you're like, oh, there was something in those beats.
Exactly. Yeah. I think everything I did from then at the beginning, because I used to just, I didn't know how to really make a beat. So all I would do is just play a lot of piano and then just add a beat on top of it. And then nobody really want to rap on it. It's like, well, that ain't what I'm supposed to do with that. You know, so I had to learn how to, you know, dumb the piano down and you know, and put certain sounds in there and put drums where they supposed to be. But, you know, making those beats all those years ago is, I'm still using that same format, you know, at making beats now.
And who's the, well, by the way, do you listen now and you're like, oh, those drums were just not hitting? Or those?
Oh, yeah. definitely. I still have all the tapes of all the beats I ever made from the beginning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have you taken any of those ideas from back then and
like,
used
them like more recently?
Not yet, but I am going to do that.
Yeah?
Yes, I am.
Today.
Yeah. Just got to find me a cassette player.
That'd be dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Epic sent us like a new Jodeci cassette in 2015. It was like... great. So now we have a cassette. We don't know how to play it.
Yeah. And we went on Twitter. We're like, does anyone in New York City have a cassette player?
Yeah, and like 2,000 retweets later, nobody did.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
No one. Yeah. Mm. So, and actually, that would be really cool if you could sample yourself.
I'm on it already. I started pulling the tapes out.
That'd be dope. Yep. Okay, so
wait, so but you're okay. So then you move to Atlanta at some point, mm-hmm. and you start. Gucci is your first actual like project down there, right?
Yes. Yep.
And he found you at the barbershop?
Well, no, I was just a new kid, you know, in Atlanta with a studio at my mom's house. So you know, guys, I was going to barber college, and I met a few guys up there, and one of those guys. Was friends with Gucci Mane. Now Gucci Mane wasn't a rap artist or none of that, you know. At this time,
what was he?
He was just a friend of, you know, a buddy of mine. Yeah. So he came over one day and he was like, he wrote a song for his little nephew and it was called Little Buddy. And like, man, you put a beat to this, and it just that's how we kind of met and started, you know, building chemistry from there. So I made a beat for his little cousin, and the song that he wrote was just, to me, was genius. They was like nursery rhymes, but it was just something special about it. So after we did that a few times, he came over and saying like, you know, I wrote the song for my nephew. It's like, won't you do it? Or, you know, he might go in there and lay the song so his nephew would see how it's supposed to go. And I just kept saying like, dang, bro, you sound so good doing it. It's like, why you don't ever rap? And it went to, you know, I am going to rap. And he did a few songs. You know, it was fun until he started taking it serious.
Man. You know, it's so easy for people to say in 2016 when, you know, when he's in Vogue or when he's, you know, on the cover of Fader or he's in the New York Times, like, oh, he's charismatic and he's like a genius. But to see that all those years ago, that's pretty amazing.
It is. And I seen it when other people didn't see it. Like, people were like, he ain't really good. I don't know what you're talking about.
So you were in your parents' basement.
Basement, yep.
Did your parents meet him then?
Yeah, definitely.
So he came over.
He was over every day. It's almost like he lived there. He'd come over every day at 7 o'clock in the morning.
7 in the morning?
Yeah, 7 early. In the morning, early. He brushing his teeth like, Zay, I'm on the way over there. And we just doing music. You know, it's a fun thing for us at that time.
Yeah. Probably not for your parents. They were like, it's early.
Yeah. So.
And how late did the sessions go?
It all depends. Sometimes we might do a couple of songs. He might have to leave and go do whatever. We take a break. I go to the barbershop, cut some hair. We might come back later on that evening, do some more. It just all depends on how we felt.
Did you see the Netflix documentary on the Dungeon family? This came out like in the last like 6 months
it.
Or so.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I heard it was real good.
Yeah, amazing. And obviously, like, similarly, they were recording in
the dungeon.
Rico's,
right.
Mom's basement. And, like, at a certain point, though, I mean, how soundproofed was that basement?
It wasn't really that good. If you go listen to all the earlier records, you can tell, like, it doesn't sound, the quality doesn't even sound that good.
Right.
But
how was it for everyone who's living upstairs to hear, like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, the bass just like bumping.
I will say that's when you got, you know, good parents. When like my mom really believed in, you know, and believed in what I was doing.
Yeah.
So, actually, where was the shift? Because like, you know, you said originally that your parents were not into rap.
They weren't with it. Yeah.
And so then like, at what point are they like, okay, this is your path. This is something that doesn't annoy us at 7 o'clock in the morning.
You get 20 years old and you see that, okay, my child has went and spent all his money on studio equipment. This is something he loved to do. Mm-hmm. So you almost had to, you know, give him a pass to see where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. So then once you start making a little money doing it and they can see that, they, you know, then you get more lenient.
Right.
Then I never forget when Icy came about, when we did Icy and it's on the radio. Then it's like, do you need any snacks for your friends coming over? Or do you, you know, how can we help? You know what I mean? So and that's when it really shifted.
Is Gucci the most fastest working rapper that you know that you've worked with?
I would say Gucci and Future are the fastest guys I ever worked with. Mm-hmm.
What's the longest you've seen Gucci take on one song?
Wow, not long, maybe 15 minutes. Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you probably got spoiled at that, by the way.
I'm spoiled by that. It's hard for me to work with somebody that doesn't work that fast, because even when I make beats, even when I produce, you know, it only takes me 5 to 10 minutes to do it. So, you know, anything that's taking longer than that, I get, you know, it's like, oh, it's taking too long. I get disinterested. And it's like, you know, you almost question if a person is taking longer than that, even though it's, you know, it's not true. But when a person takes longer than what we do, we think like, oh, they don't know what they're doing. because everybody don't record that fast.
Right.
That's how we do so.
So how long did So Icy take for you to come up with in the first place?
I was at the barbershop. Gucci called me like, hey, man, Young Jeezy want to do a song with us. At the time, I didn't really know who Young Jeezy really was. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to leave the barbershop now. Went home, made the beat. It had to be 5-10 minutes because we trying to make it down to the studio with Jeezy so we can do the song with him. So
you hadn't had anything constructed before?
No, not at all. That's one thing about when we make music, it's all spontaneous. It's all right on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, so nothing was premeditated. Yeah. So when we went, I did the beat. We went down to the studio and we just started making a song.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, especially right then when I never had a hit song before. I never knew, you know, I was gonna ever make a hit song. It's just, oh, we do songs every day with each other, so this is our formula. This is how we do it.
And
so,
it literally takes 5 minutes.
It literally takes five. I don't know if you ever watch me on YouTube or anything like that, but if you go and watch it, you'll see like, okay, he made the beat in 5 minutes.
And was it something where you just knew that this was going to take off?
No, never knew it. I never thought that I would be in a position that I'm in right now. I never thought I'd be a producer that had been in the game for 10 years.
But even with that one song, did you see a difference between that and everything you had done before?
Nope.
Wow.
I still was going to the barbershop every day. I was still doing, you know, my same daily routine. I almost felt like I got, maybe it was luck, like it was a lucky, I got lucky. And
right,
got
like it was like a fluke or
yeah,
something,
it was a
right?
Fluke. Yeah. I thought that, man, that was a fluke, but I ain't going to, you know, depend on that. I got to go back to the barbershop, you know.
So 5 minutes later, you made another beat and just kept going.
Yeah, so.
But really, but at that point, even with So Icy on every radio station and clearly like everyone's, you know, interested in this new sound, this new scene, this new idea, you're cutting hair. And you think that's your profession down the road,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I still think I'm cutting hair. Music was always like a side deal for me when it came to that. Because I'm a guy that, you know, I just believe in stability. And it's probably because the way I seen my parents work and, you know, the way they live their lifestyle. So it's like I didn't want to just put my all into music and then it fails. And it's like, so I always kept it as a hobby.
And what was the big difference between Atlanta and what you had known in the Bay?
I think Atlanta had just started to grow just musically, and it's all the stars was being made. You know, when you start seeing Young Jeezy, you know, start blowing up. You know, I just started seeing the difference. I started seeing so much money around, so many people with a lot of money and jewelry and cars. So, you know, that's when it caught my attention. It's like, okay, this is where I want to be as far as musically. In the Bay, I didn't really see that. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't see that at all. So
you know, you have a lot of rappers to come over to your house still.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the nicest car, or what's the nicest car that's parked outside of your house?
That somebody else drives?
Yeah, yeah. oh, sorry.
I mean, it's all nice cars, man. You know, you got, I mean, it's always Ferraris and Bentleys and Maybachs and, you know, Lamborghinis.
Is it just like on the street?
Yeah, they'd be on the street.
You should get a valet. You
yeah.
Have somebody like, you know,
you know,
holding keys.
For a while, I thought my neighbor was going to, you know, start really tripping, but, you know, I guess they enjoy seeing all these nice cars coming around.
Well, do anybody like pass out like CDs in front of your house or?
Pass out CDs?
Yeah. Like, are people
like trying to get on?
Yeah. Or is your address not out there like that?
It's not out there like that.
Do you
want to
put it out there on this podcast?
No.
Okay.
No. I will say I got scared a few times because I didn't have somebody knock on my door and be like, hey, you Zaytoven, you stay right here?
Whoa.
And I don't know. You know, I don't know if they came from the neighborhood where they come from, but maybe them seeing so many cars or so many artists come to the house.
Yeah, it's a good tip off.
Yeah,
you
it's
say,
like a tip off.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm like, man, where you? Who told you? Who told you to come over here? So, yeah, but you know. Genuinely, I don't really have too many problems when it comes to that.
So before you had your home studio, so you went from your parents' place, then were you working in studios around Atlanta?
Yeah, I started moving around. I was at Patchwork a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, Big Cat had a studio, like when Gucci was with Big Cat, so I was at that studio a lot. But Patchwork and Big Cat studio, but still, most of the time, I was still at the house. Everybody still wanted to come to the house and record.
Well, beyond Gucci, who started coming over to your parents' house that were, you know, people that would sort of change your course?
Titty Boy, 2 Chainz used to come.
So
that's when he was Titty Boy.
We had Drama up here, and we're like, We're like, and we've known Drama for a while. We're like, Drama, tell us, like, we don't want to hear any 2 Chainz stories. We want to hear titty boy stories. Yeah, so can you share some titty boy stories?
Titty boy story. I still have titty boy recording at the house. I like, you know, because I used to make the beats and record them, but at the same time, I had a video camera, so I just wanted to record everybody that's coming over because I felt like the footage would be good.
Yeah.
I remember putting the camera on Titty Boy at, like, maybe 1 in the morning, right? And he's writing his verse. He's finna get ready to record his verse. Then I put the camera back on the clock again. It had to be about 6 o'clock. And we still waiting on him to do, you know, to finish his verse. And oh, it was just like, man, it's just killing me. You know what I mean? That's my most memorable story about Titty Boy being at the house. Yeah.
We know a story about CeeLo. Mm-hmm. How one time when he was recording, he laid on the couch, like, all the way back. Like, head, like, on the actual couch. And they moved the microphone into his mouth. Like, right, like, that far away. Does anybody have, like, weird recording methods?
Weird recording method.
Like, I need, like, 10,000 candles in here trying not to start a fire.
Or I need to, like, you know, like, CeeLo record, like, upside down, like, you know. And
nah, for the most part, it's just speed. Speed has been the, I guess it can be, you know, unusual at times, but the speed, like, guys like Gucci Man, if it takes too long for the beat, he can have an idea and he's ready to record, and you go 5 minutes past that, he's like, I don't even want to record no more. I don't like the beat no more. Like, you know, that's just how, you know, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
But that's just how, you know, how he worked.
So, obviously.
Does Gucci, like, cycle through flows a lot, or is he just like, okay, this is the one I've decided on, and that's it?
That's it. Once he got something he decided on, he going with it.
All right.
So, being in Atlanta, and it's such a hotbed for producers and artists alike, and it really is, I mean, arguably the center of hip-hop in the last, like, 10 years, right? Yeah. Can you talk about, do all producers get along with each other? Like, because that, you know, seemingly it could be territorial, mm-hmm. and people could not want to get along, but you get along with Metro, and you get along with
Sonny
and all these guys. Like, how is it not like, I'm just going to be on my own island and not mess with anybody else?
Well, I think at the beginning it was like that. When I first started, now it was, all I can remember is me, Shawty Red, mm-hmm. and I think Drama Boy and Nitty at the time. That's all I can remember. And we didn't work with each other, you know.
Did you run into each other?
Yeah, we ran into each other all the time. And we had respect for each other. And, you know, and we like, you know, we say we like each other, music and all that.
But you didn't mean it.
Well, it's like, well, we really just competitive. Like, I really need to go harder than him. You know, mm-hmm. so we watching each other moves. Now, the new guys, like you say, with Metro and Mike Will and mm-hmm. Sonny, they is like a whole nother generation after, you know. So I think I opened up because I think they had so much respect for me and the way they treat me and the way they talk about me. It's like, man, Zay, you, like, you know, you the king of this, or, you know, I watch you. You the reason I started making beats. So it just it genuinely made me want to reach out and work with these guys, you know.
And who was the first person you, like, did a co-production with?
The first person I did a co-production with that got placed on something was Metro. Mm-hmm. Sonny was the first guy to come over, and it was the idea of, like, us doing a beat together. So.
And how do those situations work? Are you do you prefer just to stay on the keys, or are you like, I want to loop something up drum wise? And
it's either or. It's like when Metro come over, we don't know what we're doing. It's like I might just start some drums and add maybe one piano sound, and then give it to him. He go in the other room and add whatever he add to it, or he might have 5 you know, tracks that he didn't did already that need to be finished. Some of them might have drums in them. Some of them might just have, you know, a sound in it. It's just, you know, however it comes, and we just work it like that.
And Mike Will executive produced Gucci's new album, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I believe the way I read it worked was that Gucci would call mm-hmm. from jail and explain a sound as best he could. Mm-hmm. Or maybe hear a beat that Mike was doing and adjust it via the phone, right? Uh-huh. How would you be involved in that process? Would Mike have to convey what Gucci had thought he heard or wanted to get?
I'm not really sure. I just know that Gucci heard the 2 Chainz record, the MF and Right, that me and Mike Will done together. And it, you know, made him click, like, hey, man, this is what I need. I need this sound right here. And, you know, naturally, I've been the first producer that he ever worked with, Mike Will came not too long after that. So, you know, we've been the first guys to even work with him. So I just felt like, you know, he said he wanted to take it all the way back to the basics, go back to the guys he done started with, and let us work together, you know, bringing a new sound together. So
how does it feel to be, like, executive produced, though, by Mike Will?
Well, I wouldn't say. I don't even really know what that means.
Neither do I.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, I think we all did this, you know, we just collectively just came together and put the records together. So, you know, I don't really know what that means.
While Gucci was away, there was a steady stream of music that came out. There were mixtapes and, you know, it was just.
Yeah. Has anybody listened to all of Gucci's catalog?
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of fans that, you know, that listen to every song he put out.
Have you?
No, I haven't. I can't.
How can you keep up?
I can't keep up.
Yeah.
There has to be some songs that just come out and you're just like, I'm hearing this for the first time. Yeah. I've never, yeah.
I can go to the club still now and hear something like, I never heard this before. And it could have been out, you know, maybe 3 years. So.
So while he went away, was there a hesitancy that you would work with anyone else, like, exclusively? Or did you want to sort of, like, save certain beats for Gucci? How would that work?
No, when he went away, it's like, you know, I felt like I had to get even more on my grind and stay relevant. So when he does come out, I'm one of the guys he still wants to go to, like, you know, because I don't want him to just come to me because, like, man, we're just the oldest friends in the world and, you know, I'm going to help you out and put you on this album. I wanted to be like, I need Zaytoven to be on my album. I need Zaytoven to produce me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I took that as in, okay, he's gone. Now I'm finna go even harder and make myself bigger. So when he comes out, he's going to be like, man, Zay, you done been going extra hard. Like, you know, I need you. So.
And he said that.
Yeah, that's what he said. So.
I love on Way Back, which might be my favorite track on the new album. I love how he says, and I think he really means it.
He really does.
He'd rather rap on your track than a Dre track.
I never had an artist brag so much about me than Gucci. So, you know, when he told me, he said, Zay, you finna hear this song, you about to fall out. And when I heard I heard him say the line, that man just made me smile so big. Yeah.
What was the first moment like seeing him when he came out of jail?
Well, you gotta, you know, keep in mind that we have done this over and over again.
Right.
You know, so it was the same thing. You know, we was happy to see each other. We hug, we smile, we laughing, joking. And then it's right back to work.
Were you surprised at how he looked?
No, not at all. Because, you know, I done seen Gucci before he got big. I done seen him when he been smaller than what he is. I done seen him, you know, when he had hair standing on top of his head, when he had a big old beard. So, you know, I wasn't surprised because I know Gucci, if he's gone for that amount of time, he's going to change his look. He want to do something that's going to make everybody just be like, ooh, you seen Gucci, man? So,
how could you be sure it was actually him? Did you, like, test him?
No. No. I was talking to him, you know, weeks and months before he got out. So, you know, I'm talking to the same guy I know. You know, I know it's the same guy.
Or so you think.
So you're saying it could be a clone.
It could. I mean, listen. He's acknowledged it as such.
Can you talk about the big concert that they did down at the Fox Theater to celebrate Gucci being home?
That was big, man. That was so big for me and him. We talked right before the show had went on. He was like, Zay, this is just so big for us right here. Because I think we created a certain genre of music. Not just saying we created trap music, but the way, you know, our trap music sound is what, you know, everybody's mimicking, you know, right now and everybody that's trying to be a part of. So it was so big for us to sell out, you know, for him to sell out the Fox Theater.
Atlanta.
It was just like, man, you know, we never thought that. We never seen that coming, so.
And,
I mean, everybody was there.
Everyone was there.
Everybody was there.
Dolph drove in.
Yeah.
From Memphis.
Yeah, what was it, like a green Lambo?
Or like a blue one or something like. No, I think it was a blue Ferrari.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm colorblind. So close. Yeah.
But the appearance that made us most happy, and I think from what we hear, made the crowd most happy. Above Drake, above Future, above anybody else.
OJ the Juicer.
OJ the Juicer.
Hey!
Yeah. You know, and we had, you know, we fought so hard. I said, man, OJ the Juice Man has to be in this concert.
And got the biggest ovation.
He did. Yeah. He did. Because that's what people want to see. If you're talking about Gucci, man, you want to see the guys that helped, you know, that whole sound blossom. And that was Zaytoven and OJ.
And so. Do we understand correct that you guys are working on a full length together?
Yes, we are.
Oof. Do you have a timeline for that?
No, I don't have a timeline.
Is there necessarily a timeline when you guys work together, or it's just like when it's done, it's done?
It's when it's done, or when we feel like dropping it, or when he feels like dropping it, that's when it is.
And what can you say about your relationship with OJ, especially with a song like Make the Trap Say Hey?
This been my bro. He's always going to be my bro, whether he's on top or whether he's not even doing music anymore. You know, those are the guys I'm most proud of, because they grew their whole career right in my mom's basement. So Gucci and OJ, always going to be my, you know, my top guys.
Where's Waka at these days?
You know what? I'm not sure. If you've been listening to the music or paying attention, like, I always was rocking with Waka, but I wasn't as influential in his career. I didn't do as much music with him. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can't really speak on Waka as much as I can like a OJ Juice.
Right. In the Bricks video, Nicki Minaj has a cameo. Mm-hmm.
Because she was down with Death early, at the time. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was your relationship with her back then? Did you?
She was like, you know, another artist that she was coming over every day over to my mom's basement. You know, Gucci. You know, she was just like a one of us. She was like a OJ the Juice man. She was like a Waka or somebody at the time, just coming over recording all the
but,
time.
But from New York though, so is her like flow and sort of attitude and presence a little different.
Yeah. It definitely was a little different. And, you know, she was a pretty girl, so I think all the rappers was coming over just to see just to see her. You know, they weren't even caring about how she rapped. Yeah.
When Asylum got involved with the Gucci project, obviously with the OJ project, was there any thought at the time that you would be a part of that from an A&R standpoint, from a having your own label in there? Was there any talk of you being a part of Asylum?
No, not really. It was just, I think I was just the guy that was just doing all the music and was a big part of it. I don't know how the deals and everything got structured. So, you know, I didn't really get a lot of info on what was really going on. It was just like, okay, we Zaytoven doing all the music and Gucci and OJ, we doing a deal over here with, you know, with them, so.
But, like, if you look at, like, what Mike Will has done over at Interscope, mm-hmm. and with Ray Schremmerd, mm-hmm. and, like, everything that he touches, right. under mm-hmm. his umbrella, is mm-hmm. there any thought that maybe you'd want to have your own situation where you can grow an artist and get credit for it fully?
I thought about that all the time, and I always felt like, man, this is what I need to do. You know, I need to do this now. This is the next level. This is what I want to do. But then I always have, you know, drawbacks where it's like, well, I don't want to fully commit to that. Maybe I don't want to really have my own artist as much, because it's, you know, it's more babysitting. You're more responsible for this person's career and everything. I kind of like working with the artist the way I do now, where I can still, you know, I can still work with the guys, you know, all the new guys that's coming out. I can still do so much with Futures, do so much with Gucci, or still be so much part of 21 Savage or Lil Uzi Vert, or, you know, all these guys, without really having to wrap my mind around these my artists right here. I got to make sure they do this. I got to make sure they blow up. I got to make sure they single goes gold or whatever. So I'm still fighting with it.
What would you say, what song are you most proud of?
It's a lot of songs I'm really
proud
of.
There's a lot of songs you've made.
Yeah, it's a lot of songs that really I'm just.
But
really,
like, you know, winning a Grammy, mm-hmm. like, is that like a thing for you, or is it just like, yeah?
It didn't really make me feel a certain way. It's good, you know. I can use it as a conversation piece. Like, man, you know,
I did a number one song. Yeah.
I got a Grammy with Usher. You
know, yeah, what I mean? Where does it sit, by the way?
Just in the basement. Yeah. In the basement with all my, you know, plaques and pictures. And
that's like,
you know,
a light stunt.
Yeah.
It's like in the basement with everything else.
Yeah. It keeps the door open.
Yeah, it keeps the door open. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't mean as much to me as a Icy or Versace.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean as much to me.
I'm sure it means more to go to a Hawks game and hear Sir Foster playing Bricks on the...
Did Versace send you a bunch of Versace after that song came out?
No, I actually went to the store and said, man, let me get a free shirt or a pair of shoes. They're like, no, we can't do that.
Nothing?
What?
But we love the song. Yeah.
You're really great. Thank you.
That doesn't do me any good when I want to, like, go out. Like,
yeah.
Did you get more phone calls after the Grammy happened, or...
Well, no, I didn't, because I don't think anybody even really knew that I even did the Usher or even I don't even know if they even cared as much.
Really?
I was so known for being like the trap king of making beats that, you know, it's like anybody really paid the Usher that much attention.
Are there any genres or parts of genres that you'd like to work with? Like, do you want to go like that R&B route and change it up? Do you want to work outside of
right? Do you want to work with like Good Charlotte?
I don't even know who Good Charlotte is, but what I have realized is, you know, I did the Fall Out Boys remix album,
mm-hmm, right,
that came out with not too long ago,
mm-hmm,
close to a year ago,
right.
And what I'm finding out, even the other genres of music that I do want to get into, whether it's R&B or pop, they're now coming to our world. They started to come, right, to the trap world now, so it allows me to still be who I am. It still allowed me to be the Zaytoven,
mm-hmm,
and let, you know, kind of wait it out and let them come to me. Because now, like when Usher called me, you know, for a track, or somebody called me Big, you know, that's our R&B guy, they say, send me the beats that you send in Future and Migos and Gucci. They don't want, you know, they don't want this big R&B sounding music no,
right,
more. They want the music that we're doing, you know, that's, you know, making the kids' ears turn up. So.
Yeah.
By the way, Good Charlotte is very much like Fall Out Boy, so weirdly yeah, on point.
Okay, we on, yeah, point. Yeah, yeah, we on point.
Wait, what was the conversation like with Fall Out Boy?
Nothing. I was almost scared when they called me, like, yeah, we want Zaytoven to, you know, to be on this project. And I'm like, well, I don't know their music. I don't even make that type of music. I'm like, what y'all want? Why y'all want to do something with me?
Why did they want to?
Well, they wanted this trap. They wanted the sound that I had already doing, but yeah, they wanted to put Fall Out Boys on that.
But like, was there any like specific song that they were just like, oh, well, this is like?
No, what I did is I redid Irresistible and was it Twin Skeletons? I think that's the name of it.
Hmm.
So, you know, and they was just like, we want to redo these songs, but we want you to do it in your way. So,
that's dope.
It is dope.
Have you ever taken an artist to church?
Yes. Yeah. All the time.
Yeah?
Yeah. They didn't came to choir rehearsal. They didn't, you know, came in and sat in church. Gucci didn't came into church before.
Really?
Yeah.
Like to sit in with you or to sit like in the pews or something?
They sit in the pews.
Oh, okay. Like,
yeah, they just came.
They're there to find God, Eric.
I don't know. I don't know if there was anybody who
not
you decided
there for a
to
walk
like,
through.
Yeah, no, have a feature. Yeah. Like, you know. How awesome would that be? It'd be like, you know, on a Sunday, it'd be like your own sort of summer jam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See, how, this is a good idea. How do we make this happen?
I'm saying, bring Usher to church on Sunday.
Yeah.
That should be what you would do.
Well, Usher goes to a
competing
church?
A mega church?
A mega church already, so.
Do you go to competing churches? Do you go to, like, you do your set in the morning, and you're just like, oh, I'll go?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, we don't know anything about church.
Yeah. Yeah.
The funny thing is, so our friend Greg, his birthday is Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. So we always go up to his mom's house. She makes a big dinner. Mm-hmm. And it doubles as his birthday dinner. And so all the friends are over, plus the family's over to celebrate Christmas, right? Uh-huh. And then afterwards, they go to Midnight Mass. Do you go to Midnight Mass? Okay.
No.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have
the it's
thing.
The turn up, yeah.
Yeah. And so from our town, obviously we went to school. We're like, honestly, not many Jews like in our town, right? Mm-hmm. Mostly Italian people. And so they all go to Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. And every year we say, because we grew up 30 minutes north of here in Westchester County. Mm-hmm. And we're like, every year we're saying, Greg, afterwards, we're going to go with you
right
there. And cause so all the people who haven't seen us since high school, like we walk in and like the holy water starts like bubbling or something like that, right? And they're just like, what? Like, what happened to you guys? And we never do it.
And never do it.
We always take the train back.
I would go to church with you, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's good. I invite you. I'll bring you on.
All right.
Do we answer like who all has come to church besides Gucci?
You know, other guys like the guy Young LA when he was, you know, he was coming around a lot. So, you know, a lot of times there's somebody that's with me all the time. They might even get dropped off at the house. And so now they got to ride with me everywhere I go. So if I got to go to church or rehearsal or something, it's like you in the car with me. So you got to come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I just have to look up. Yeah, I knew I had a Young LA. Ain't I?
Yeah, of course.
That was
big song.
That
big
was
song.
Awesome
song.
Big song. Yeah.
Okay. Atlantic asked us to do this if it wasn't for Gucci campaign, mm-hmm, right? And they have a bunch of people from Atlanta, a bunch of people from New York, talk about the influence that Gucci had. And we went in there and we spoke for a while. And I think they're putting it together as a bigger project.
Yeah, as
now.
A full length.
They released some like smaller clips. Were you involved?
Yeah,
with that?
I was. Yeah.
We talked about his influence in terms of like being the most influential A&R, right? Mm-hmm. And I said that I think in the past decade, there's no one more important in rap music than Gucci and Kanye West. Mm-hmm. I think the two of them together. So clearly there's this family tree. You know, it starts with Gucci and then, or maybe it's like a pyramid. And and it goes through, you know, everyone who's been influenced by him. And you can see it in the Migos. Yeah, you can see it with Ray Schremer. And all these artists, right? Mm-hmm. Now that everyone is doing something Gucci-ish, would you say that, or can you see what the next sort of like derivation is? Can you see where it's going next? Not that you have to give everyone like your secrets, but can you see what the next step is?
It's really hard to see right now because, you know, it's the kids are different and they're taking, like you say, so many people then take from, like, you know, they take from Gucci. Even with the music I do, they take from what we created so long ago that it's hard to see what the next, you know, the next wave is or what's going to be the next thing. So what I do is, you know, I always try to continue to be with the, like you say, the Lil Yachty's and the Uzi Verts and all because I think mix matching what we do from, you know, since we've been in the game for so long and these new kids with the way they listen to music and how they present music, you know, I think that what's going to help create the new wave. Even with Gucci, when Gucci start working with these new guys or guys that they might be kind of weird or something, that's what's going to, you know, make that new thing or make that new wave. And that's going to be, to me, like the future of this stuff.
Who's somebody that came over to your house and you were just like, what is this person doing? Like, this person's like very young and very weird.
Weird. I haven't really rocked with a lot of weirdos, really.
Like, no, I mean, like, not like weird, like I don't trust this person. Yeah. Like, like,
not the person who knocked on your door.
Yeah, and was like, hey, like, Zaytoven.
I'm talking about musically. Yeah. I'm talking about musically. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't really, to me, there has been a lot of guys that's been weird to me. Mm-hmm. Everybody I done worked with, you know, has been somebody that's, we almost share the same ear when it comes to music. So,
but, like, what about people who have come over who you've been like, okay, like, I don't know this person, and then, like, they've surprised you?
The biggest surprise to me was Nicki Minaj. And, you know, because she used to come over, and I used to work with her all the time. And it's like, okay, this is cool. You know, she can rap. She good. I didn't see her being the mega star that she is right now, so... That's been the biggest surprise, I think.
But that's okay because you saw Gucci before anybody
else. I saw Gucci before everybody. I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you coming through.
I appreciate y'all having me, man.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you soon. We'll see you at church.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about this podcast, if people want to find out more of the everyday goings-on of two Jews on the Upper West Side, where are they going to go?
Church.
Where else are they going
to
go?
You can go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal to watch all of our episodes. You can also go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. Check out A Waste of Time with It's the Real on iTunes.
Please.
Any of them. You can go to twitter.com/itsthereal, Instagram, It's the Real, Facebook, It's the Real, Snapchat.
Wait.
Yep. That's right. It's the Real, and It's the Real Eric, because It's the Real was taken. But you want to know what? This podcast is not going to grow if it's just the two of us talking about everywhere you can find us on the internet.
That's right.
You can also tell a friend.
And then that friend should go tell a friend. And that third friend should go rate us and subscribe on iTunes and leave a nice comment. Jeff, do you have a friend that you would like to tell?
I have a few people who hit me up this week.
Yeah.
And said, hey, shout me out.
And you said,
what?
And said, report for Sam.
That's right. Rezzy Knight on Instagram.
How do you spell that?
B-R-E-Z-Z-Y Knight. With a K.
Okay.
He said, you guys better shout out Memphis on the next podcast.
Better shout out Memphis. Shout out to Memphis.
Yeah. Shout out to Memphis.
Wait. Memphis Bleak?
Oh.
Or Memphis, Tennessee?
I don't know.
All right. Well, they should find out. Get back to us.
No, maybe we should resend this shout out until we figure it out.
You think we should take it back?
Yeah, take it back.
All right. Who else you want to shout out?
I got hit up by a guy from Texas whose name is Michael Jackson.
Wait.
Yep. You heard that right. It's his birthday.
Happy birthday to Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Wow.
He said that he wanted to shout out on the podcast.
Hey, listen. Shout out to Michael Jackson. Spread the word, Mike.
And then there was somebody
King of
else.
Pop?
Yeah, for your birthday, do us a favor.
I would like to shout out a bunch of people. You know, I like to commemorate people's birthdays, Justine Skye. I also want to shout out Shinsuke Ikeda had a birthday.
Wow.
David Cho had a birthday.
Yep.
Any other birthdays we should mention?
Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson! Shout out to Michael Jackson. I also want to make mention of a guy who goes by Dollar Bin.
Oh, that's who I wanted to shout out. Okay, so yeah, so that's perfect.
Dollar Bin, just like it sounds. D-O-L-L-A-R underscore B-I-N. Dollar Bin. I don't know what his real name is. maybe it is Dollar Bin. Who knows?
Maybe it's Michael Jackson.
I want to say, Dollar Bin was nice enough to say on Twitter, I swear you guys are the only podcast outro I listen to. On others, I just delete it. But you guys? Nah.
Yo, it's the real king of the outros.
Woo! Not so bad on the intros. Gotta be fair.
Nah.
Kind of good on the intros.
I don't know.
And those interviews, they'll do.
Not for real.
They'll
for
do.
Real. No, but like, I think that we're killing the podcast game when it comes to outros.
Outro kings.
Outro kings.
Can I just say we ran into Elliot Wilson at the Young Thug Jeffrey listening, and he was like, most fun interviews in hip-hop, that's what you guys are running with? And I was like, look,
that's all we got.
what else can we say? It's not like we're like the most credible interviews in hip-hop. It's the most fun interviews in hip-hop. Go
people
run with that.
Laugh at us.
That's right.
People laugh with us.
Some people laugh at us. Shout out to everyone who's laughing at us, with us, or against us. Whatever it is, we're here doing it every week. Jeff, do you want to do this again next week?
Not for real, for real.
Not for real, for real.